Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this very first day of December. And it's All Things Political coming up. I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving. I'm amazed how many people say Thanksgiving is just their favorite holiday. I think in our family that's true as well, and I hope yours was just truly meaningful. So All Things Political is what we have on Mondays at 1 o'clock, and our guest this hour is somebody I've been looking forward to speaking with ever since I saw his article in the New York Times Sunday Review section on November 15th. It is titled Delusions of the Democrats, and it examines why in the midterm elections Democrats lost all over America. In that November 15 piece, he writes they lost big by much wider margins than predicted. Nor was the election an anomaly. It was the third disastrous midterm for Democrats in the past 20 years. The Democrats now hold fewer elected offices at both the federal and state level than at any time since the 1920s. And he drew our attention to a piece that appeared in the Times over the weekend, not written by him, but it looks at how Republicans who took control of 69 of 99 statehouse chambers didn't rely solely on a bench of older white men. Their key races hinged on strategic recruitment of women and minorities, many of them first-time candidates who are now learning the ropes and joining the possible group of people who may run for higher office. We're going to talk about that and some other issues, but I think that this one is going to attract a lot of response from you. Kevin is an essayist and an author, chief historical researcher of the American Century. He wrote the monthly In the News column for American Heritage magazine. He's also a novelist. His first novel, Sometimes You See It Coming, based loosely on the life of Ty Cobb. Also Dreamland, Paradise Alley, Stryver's Row. His work has been published in the Washington Post, Chicago Tribune, Los Angeles Times, Harper's, and many other publications. To join All Things Political this hour, the phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Hi, Kevin. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be there.
Yeah, our pleasure. A historic shift, you write in that article. The Democrats no longer please anyone much, neither the depressed base nor the less committed group. They really are a party that just doesn't seem to have too many people very excited about them.
Yeah, these have really been disastrous losses now. You know, there was a disastrous midterm in 94, another one in 2010, this one in 2014. There was a smaller disaster in 2002. I mean, Republicans now control 69 of the 99 individual state legislative bodies. You know, the highest total ever. Democrats have lost over 900 state legislators in these last two elections, which puts them down to their lowest total of state and federal elected officials since the 1920s, when the party essentially fell apart.
Mm-hmm. And as you pointed out in the article in the Times over the weekend, the Republicans, everybody says, well, just wait till 2016. Not as many people vote in the midterm elections. Everything will go Democratic come 2016. But this was an interesting piece that looked at first-time candidates who are Latino, who are women, who are minorities. The Republicans see what's coming, and they're acting in response to that, aren't they?
Yeah, this was a good part of what my article was aimed at, was this continuing sort of delusion among a lot of well-meaning Democrats and liberals that the future is ours, inevitably, that we just have the demographics are all on our side, all those nasty old white people are dying off, so now, you know, it will be this you know, increasingly democratic country automatically. And this, you know, this is simply not true. It's not at all inevitable. And, of course, Republicans are, as you say, very smartly out there trying to recruit minorities to their party as well and had a lot of success with it this year. You know, they had a net gain of 59 women in state legislatures. Democrats lost 63 women office holders. Republicans added 10 Latino legislators. Democrats lost 5. Republicans elected 17 new black legislators. You know, this is something the party has, you know, the Republican Party has actually put itself toward doing, toward recruiting people of all backgrounds. And the thing is, when you hold power in this country or pretty much any country, that attracts people. When you're seen as the party of losers, it becomes harder to keep any of your base there. When you're seen as, you know, when you have power also to a certain degree, you can form, you can pick your own battles. You can set your own fights. It's not quite as far as Karl Rove's assertion that, you know, that we determine reality now. But to a great degree, they will determine the battlegrounds on which future elections are fought. And that is not a good thing for the Democrats.
Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about what it was that the Republicans were offering in the midterms that made people vote that way. A lot would say, well, the Republicans weren't giving us any great vision either.
No, I don't think they have a great vision at all. I think they have a pretty terrible vision for the future. But they were able to win on a basis of several things, you know, concern over what were seen as these various crises going on in which the Obama administration was seen as incompetent in handling, such as Ebola, such as the Islamic State in the Middle East. But beyond that, I don't think the Democrats really grasp how terrible this recession has been. And again, it's a place where Democrats weren't responsible for the recession, and they did a much better job of dealing with it than the Republicans had, but not nearly enough, not nearly in terms of what had to be done. I mean, for instance, to give you a figure, between the end of 2001 and the end of 2009, we lost about one-third of our manufacturing jobs in this country. Since the end of 2009, Democrats have restored about 11% of all those jobs that were lost, you know, and they were really kind of shocked that they didn't get more credit for this, plus a little, you know, an uptick on the stock market, and plus, you know, decent things like, you know, insuring more people under Obamacare. But they just acted as if they hadn't had a clue as to how hard so many people had been hit by this recession, how hollowed out their you know, family wealth was,
right?
How difficult this has been.
And you remind us of history, and let's get a little history lesson here in your article. The Democratic Party, you write, that shot to some 50 years of overwhelming electoral success beginning in the 1920s was helped, you say, in part by changing demographics, but it was helped probably more by many other things, and it addressed what you just outlined, people's economic well-being.
Yeah, the Roosevelt Coalition, you know, started in part because you had these demographics where there were more ethnic whites in cities than there had been, and this was part of the Democratic base. You know, it was in the 20s, it was kind of odd coalition of Southern whites, resentful still about the Civil War, and urban, you know, urban ethnic new immigrants. And the demographics were changing in their favor, but not nearly enough to bring about the sort of dominance that Democrats would assume. What they had to do was convert a lot of people. They had to win over a lot of people who had previously been Republicans or progressives or populists or even communists, you know, or people who were simply alienated and not voting in the, you know, in the elections at all. They had to actively win those people to their side, and this is what they have to do now. And they, you know, instead of just waiting around and waiting for the demographics to change.
Mm-hmm. You end the article by talking about, well, inviting people to dream a little. You don't build an enduring coalition out of who Americans are. You do it out of what you can be, what we can be. It's been a long time. You know, I think that's one of the reasons that President Obama was elected, that it was this vision of we're going to have something here that's a big thing, you know, and he talked big, and then not much has happened in 6 years since that day. It's hard to believe that it hasn't, that people haven't addressed what you outline, because it does seem to be the issue of the day. What's holding everybody back, and what kind of big ideas do you think, Kevin, are needed?
I think it's an essential lack of vision by these conservative Democrats, and I would put, from his performance in office, Mr. Obama among those. You know, it's this feeling of basically that things were kind of all right before, there just needed to be some fairly minor adjustments made, and everything would run smoothly again, and I don't think that's the case at all. you know, it's you look at the history of the Democrats and when they were successful, and it was pushing these programs that just transformed people's lives. You know, you think about something like electrifying a lot of the South and the West with projects like the TVA dams. You know, this not only brought wealth to the area, it just changed how people lived every day. You know, you had to spend like, a couple fewer hours every day washing the clothes, you know, because you could now have a washing machine in your house, your town, you know, things like this. The GI Bill, which meant people could, you know, could go to college, could go abroad, could buy a house, could do all these things, change their whole outlooks, you know, civil rights and liberties, labor organizing. You could have some control over where you worked. Agricultural reforms, you know, this is the thing, too. These were coming from the grassroots up. This was the Democratic Party basically embracing things that had been pushed forward by regular people for, you know, in the case of like a lot of the ways of making agriculture profitable for family farms, people have been pushing this for 60, 70 years through organizations like the Grange and the Populace. You know, this was real transformational change. And the problem is not only that President Obama hasn't brought this about, but that this really hasn't even been seriously proposed, either by him or before him by President Clinton.
Well, he did talk about building our infrastructure. Remember that speech that he gave on the bridge, wherever it was, somewhere in Ohio, that we need to do that. We need to put money into all of that. It didn't go anywhere. It wasn't for want of trying, was it?
A lot of it has been very small potatoes when you get down to it. You know, I did a piece on trains in this country last year, and, you know, there's a nice plan for building all these immediate rail corridors of like 100 miles or so between population centers. That would have been a real good idea to kind of build on our, you know, existing infrastructure and, you know, make train transportation cheap and alluring. And, you know, then what he's proposing came out, and it was a total of $8 billion for something like 14 of these around the country. You know, it was a pathetically small amount for what needed to be done. And things like that signal to people in Washington that you're not serious about it, you know. And this is the case. It's always been this kind of incremental, these kind of carefully crafted top-down ideas that he's trying to push through, as Clinton did before him. You know, if you remember things like school uniforms, you know, things like this were going to make people dream and we're going to, you know, bring them to the Democrats. It was ridiculous.
That reminds me of something that Robert Reich said, this former labor secretary, a long time ago.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still, you know, somewhat a fan. He worked in the administration, but he said that the main thing that the Clinton administration gave us was the V-chip.
Yeah. Right. You know, and at the same time, deregulating the entire financial system. You know,
exactly.
And ending welfare as a last resort for people.
Right.
You know, these sorts of things have, you know, and I think this goes to the heart of the problem, too, which is that really the new breed Democrat, the conservative DLC type Democrat, doesn't really see the working and middle class, you know, kind of the manufacturing economy American, as having a future. Their whole idea is that everybody should go to college and get a couple degrees. And they're certainly much more willing than the Republicans to help you achieve that. But that just doesn't address the 70% of the country who aren't going to college, you know, who still have to be able to try to, you know, make a decent living here.
Well, and that's the problem, isn't it? This decent living, when you look at report after report after report that shows how much money everybody has lost, except for the very, very wealthy, it is a huge amount. It indicates there's something seriously wrong. And I'm amazed that nobody addresses that issue except people like Elizabeth Warren.
Sure. The amount of money and just the data, you know, the humiliation of things, the feeling of people who have lost their homes. And again, the administration had very little to do with trying to keep people in their homes. It was not something that Tim Geithner, the leading financial advisor to the administration, favored. So they did very little to keep something like 5 million people in their homes where their mortgages were underwater. You know, when you think about this, like losing your home, you know, losing something you've worked all your life to have, and that's your main asset, and you take such, you know, kind of immediate pride in. This is really a body blow to people, and they didn't seem to get that. You know, again, it was sort of like, you know, join the great white collar nation. And it's, you know, their lack of vision on this, I think, has been fatal to the party.
And they don't get it because they're just so beholden to big money interests, to Wall Street, to pharmaceuticals, to the insurance companies, to finance money so they can be reelected to not do again very much? Or is it something else?
I think at this point there is a certain beholden to that. But I think this is their genuine vision. I mean, you look at it, all around the Western world, all of these sort of formerly liberal, social democratic centrist parties have been going down because that's the vision for all of them, is that, you know, we don't make things anymore. We're moving into this post-manufacturing, post-industrial, white-collar economy, and everybody should get with the program here.
Mm-hmm.
And the inability to see how many people that leaves behind, you know, and how detrimental that is to the country in general, is something that's killing them, killing us.
Kevin Baker is our guest for All Things Political today. We have the piece that he wrote, in case you missed it, New York Times Sunday Review section. It's on our Facebook page and well worth a read. It's November 15. Our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. And he looks at, and this is a huge, it's a huge loss. Delusions of the Democrats is the name of the article. And it looks at the midterm elections and why it is that the Democrats lost in a huge way for national elections and for state house elections. He told us just now that Republicans took control in the midterms of 69 of 99 state house chambers in the midterm elections. Kevin's point in the piece, I'm not fully doing it justice because it's a lengthy piece, but why not present some kind of vision? You know, the Democrats were successful at doing that and winning elections for some 50 years, but there is no vision. He says, why try to cast yourselves as economic moderates and cultural progressives when the disparate elements of your coalition have little in common culturally, but are all struggling with the same wretched economy? Is it time for a vision? Is it time for the Democrats to have a vision? What do you make of the Republicans really reaching out to minorities and being quite successful in the midterms and having their minority candidates win, Republican candidates, particularly at the state level? Here's our phone number. A couple lines are open, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can also find us on Twitter, @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, phone lines are filled. I thought they might be on this issue, and we will start our calls with Sue in Eau Claire. Hi, Sue.
Hi. You know, I really agree with the guest. I have trouble participating in the Democratic Party because, you know, they won't even give you anything to do. But I had a incident over Thanksgiving weekend where there was something posted on Facebook about the Walmart strikes for higher wages in, I think it was Oklahoma. And a lot of my Facebook friends, who are certainly liberals, just go, well, you know, I had a job like that when I was in college, and, you know, you just deal with it. And if they don't want to work at Walmart, why don't they get a better education or just quit and get another job? And it frustrates me that so many people don't see the plight of ordinary people.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And, you know, yes, this isn't your great fun starter job when you were 13 years old and you'd take the bags out to the car and, you know, Mr. Johnson would flip you a quarter for a tip and it was more money than you'd seen in your life. You know, these are people who have to do this for their livelihoods, and they're really getting, you know, getting hammered in this economy. It's something that, you know, we have to pay attention to. And unfortunately, Democrats as well don't get it. Also, what people don't get, you mentioned, you know, just go out and get an education and get a better job. It's much, much harder than it was to get an education, much more expensive. People are just drowning in the amount of college debt they're having to run up to go to what used to be, you know, when I was going to college, state schools, and they were, you know, generally tremendous, were virtually free. State universities, you know, in a lot of places. And now you can run up tremendous debt just going there.
Right. Thank you very much for the call. And it's not just Walmart. I mean, Walmart has been accused of, and probably rightfully so, holding down wages and putting a lot of other mom-and-pop places out of business. But where do you go to find a job that's pretty well-paying or find a way to go up the ladder after some years so that you can afford to have a family and buy a house? Nobody's making a whole lot of money except just a few people.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very true. It's in our neighborhood, I know, and it's kind of, it keeps going up the ladder. You know, our neighborhood is constantly being transformed by these outrageous rents that landlords are charging, to the point where not only mom and pop stores can't stay in business, even national chains, places like Starbucks and Subways have to close, close their stores because they're being charged so much money.
So what, before we go back to phone calls, do you have the vision? What is the vision that the Democrats should adopt, or the Republicans, for that matter? What do they need to address? What do they need to offer?
I think it really has to be around a serious, radical effort to help working people in this country, to keep them in their homes, to keep them, to get them a living wage, and to realize that, you know, the robot economy isn't starting anytime soon. You know that that people work and make things, and we need them, and that they're part of this. Mm-hmm. And what those exact programs would be, I don't know. I mean, I would start with a lot of building the infrastructure here. And I know this is all blocked at the present time, but we've got to start building from the ground up and start working toward this with a clear and inspiring vision.
Rich in Rhinelander, hi.
Hi. I wanted to ask the guest about his take on anger in politics. It seems to me the Republicans are all fired up and angry, and the Democrats are not. I go back to Roosevelt's 1936 Madison Square Garden speech where he says, "Those that are against me are unanimous in their hatred for me. And I welcome their hatred." I think you have to sound like you're ready for a fight. And I don't think the Democrats sound that way.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And I think part of the problem has been a tactical one. I couldn't believe it. I thought he was basically saying this as kind of a political boilerplate about wanting everybody to work together. But I couldn't believe that President Obama, when he came in, seemed so genuinely surprised that Republicans were going to be obstructionist. You know, they've been obstructionist for years when a Democrat's been in, and they almost threw President Clinton out of office, and they were saying they were going to be obstructionist. You know, I mean, how many more times do you need to say it? So I think there has to be that kind of fighting spirit, but I think, again, that has to come from the bottom up. And, you know, I love FDR, and that was a terrific speech. But, again, he was being pushed by a lot of working people in places like the CIO, who were actively taking over, you know, the GM plants and other places. You need to push politicians with a strong movement from below. We can't just count on the next, you know, oh, will we nominate Bernie Sanders or will we nominate Elizabeth Warren?
Right.
No, it's got to start from the bottom.
And do you see any signs of that with the movement, you know, to it's on a small level, but to stop having stores open and making people work on Thanksgiving? Or it's sort of combined with Ferguson protests, which has been interesting the last few days. So people are storming malls and trying to draw attention to race issues and inequality in this country by combining that with a shut this place down.
I think that is a good sign, and I think, a lot of these protests about the wages being paid at fast food places and job actions, things like that, are a terrific start. I do think there has to be more organization, you know. It's nice that people put together the human megaphone at these Occupy things, but go out and register some humans to vote. You know, that would be a way to do things, too. At Ferguson, you know, I understand the outrage. but register to vote, build a party from the ground up. Mm. If you don't like the Democrats, build your own. You know, there's got to be organized political activity along the lines of what the Republicans have done so well in the last 30 years.
Rich brings up an interesting point, and thanks for the call, Rich. Why is it that the Republicans are so angry and are using that anger to become politically active, and Democrats don't seem to be as angry? What's going on?
Well, I think a lot of it is misplaced anger, you know, the genuine anger from the Republicans, as opposed to the professional ranters, you know, the Rush Limbaugh types. I think from regular people, it's anger that unfortunately is misdirected toward minorities, toward unions, toward public workers, toward immigrants. And that's a shame, you know, this whole feeling of like, well, I don't have a pension plan, so why should somebody who's been
right.
a school teacher for 30
Absolutely.
Years? Absolutely. You know, and that's unfortunate. Go out and get yourself a pension plan, too. Organize and get it, you know. But I think that's where a lot of that's coming from, and that's where Democrats failed miserably in trying to organize that anger and build a narrative around it. You know, mm-hmm. off the Great Depression and the Wall Street crash, even before Roosevelt took power, you had the PCORA hearings in Congress that looked into all these Wall Street financial shenanigans. And, you know, they were somewhat unfair in blaming it all on the Republicans when plenty of Democrats are doing this too, but established this narrative of this is what had gone wrong, that these elites of wealth, these malefactors of wealth, were what was ruining the country and something had to be done about them. And we didn't have a moment like that. After all the terrible misgovernance and, you know, an illegal governance of the Bush-Cheney administration, we had nothing in the way of hearings or investigations.
Kurt is next in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Kurt.
Hi. And, Kevin, I think your analysis is pretty much straight on. I would like you to compare and contrast, if possible, the populism, the progressive populism versus the regressive populism. The Democrats have marginalized, disowned progressive populist base. Yeah. The Republicans, I think, are trying to marginalize their regressive Tea Party populist base. Is the same thing going to happen in the Republican Party when their kind of populism wakes up that they're being used and abused and abandoned like the Democrat Party has abandoned its progressive populist base?
Excuse me. It could well be the case. I mean, I think people are actually going to be very frustrated by what they get. But we're talking now, too, people who have very low expectations of getting anything from government. They feel they don't get anything much from the Democrats, and they do get, you know, very much too little. So sort of the thing is, you know, if you feel like you're not going to get anything from government anyway, then you're going to favor a party that you feel is more like you culturally, that believes in maybe some of the same religious values you do, and a party that you feel is going to lighten your burden, such as by cutting your taxes. Republicans aren't really great tax cutters for the working class and middle class. When you consider the increase in payroll taxes during the Reagan administration, the average American's taxes actually went up during that period. But very, very few Americans realize that either then or now. And so this is a powerful hold that Republicans will potentially have on their base, even Tea Party people who might not like some of what they're going to get here.
Thanks, Kurt, for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655, and we have some lines open. They've been really crowded. Kevin Baker is our guest for this hour's All Things Political. Has a piece in the New York Times Sunday Review section on November 15, Delusions of the Democrats, and it looks at why Democrats lost in a historic way all over America. Lost big, he writes, by much wider margins than predicted. Why is that the case? And really, is there any reason to believe that everybody's going to come out and vote and those voters will naturally favor the Democrats in 2016? Let's go to Amelia in Madison next. Hi, Amelia.
Hi.
Hi.
I remember way back when voting Green Party, when Al Gore lost. And And I remember a lot of people getting upset with me. And my response to that, basically saying that, you know, I helped get George Bush elected. But there are two routes to take. One is vote your values 100%. Or two, the empire builds until it crumbles. And really, because voting in between, voting for moderates who don't walk the walk is not a solution. And it is certainly not going to win votes from those being disenfranchised, because they don't see a big difference in their lives between having a moderate Democrat in office and a Republican. They don't see it, because both rely on a system that needs a base of oppressed people to sustain itself. And so until we start really voting our values, really looking at what racism is and the foundation of racism and how it's interwoven into our infrastructure, and start looking at the term white privilege and what that means and how to discuss it safely so we can really look at it. And until moderates start understanding that the people protesting, they're not there to win your vote. You need them. Moderates need their votes. So moderates need to start listening to what those people are saying.
Kevin.
Well, yeah, there's a great saying by Eugene Debs that I'd rather vote for what I want and not get it than vote for what I don't want and get it. And I think that's, you know, there's a point to that. But at the same time, I would say what's most important of all is building something like the Green Party or building a liberal wing within the Democratic Party. You know, it doesn't really matter so much most of the time who you go out and vote for president. You know, I'd say if it's a close race in your state between, I don't know, Hillary Clinton and Chris Christie in 2016, vote for Hillary Clinton. You know, that'll make things marginally better. But you're better off, instead of voting for, say, Ralph Nader on the Green ticket or whoever on the Green ticket, you're better off electing like a couple Green Party councilmen in your hometown or a Green Party state legislator. You know, that would be much more of a message to send. You know, we really have to, you know, to start at the bottom and build up.
Thank you very much, Amelia, for your call. I'm thinking, Kevin, as we're talking about the, what was the figure, 36.9% of people voted in the midterms?
Yeah.
Which is, when you think about it, it's just dismal. And I'm wondering if you, what would have made a lot more people vote?
Yeah, it's the smallest percentage since 1942, and that was a war year.
Goodness.
So we're really talking about the smallest peacetime percentage since something like 1922. You know, I think a lot of more people would have voted if they had, on the Democratic side, if they'd had a clear message, if they felt they were voting for critical things in their lives. You know, I think if people felt that the politics engaged them. And, you know, in modern world, like, it's harder, you know, you don't have like the old political machines where there was somebody on the block who knew you and would recruit your vote, but still there are ways to get messages across that you have to do this for this vital thing. You know, and part of it is to have a message too that resonates and is understandable, you know, instead of this incredibly complex healthcare system, which does do some good, you know, the whole Obamacare thing, the Affordable Care Act. You know, how about Medicare for all? You know, how hard can that be to push? You know, and maybe that doesn't win the first time around, or maybe you have to compromise on it somewhat. But you say that for 20, 30 years, and you will pass this. You know, this is the lesson the Republicans have. This is the strategy the Republicans have followed in pushing the whole country to the right in the last 40 years. Even though, again and again, when polled on specific Republican issues, Americans very often disagreed with them by large amounts.
And what do you think would have happened if that had been the rallying cry for President Obama, Medicare for all?
I mean, he might, you know, it might have been defeated, or he might have had a compromise with it. If he'd had a compromise with it somewhat, it still could have been a pretty good program. You know, we look at the compromises made in Social Security in the beginning that excluded, I believe, domestic workers and farm workers, but all of these were added on. But the idea would be to get something in that people know in their lives, like, this is going to make my life much easier, not I have to go through, you know, three phone trees and deal with this clearinghouse and, you know, all of this sort of thing, and the computer's going to crash. You know, it's instead of that, you need to you need to have something that's direct and helpful to people.
Mm-hmm. Rocky in Wautoma. Hi, Rocky.
Hi, how are we doing?
All right, Rocky, how are you?
I was just wondering, the person you're interviewing is implying that it would be a good thing to increase the minimum wage. What do you think effect would that have on, say, buying groceries or anything else for that matter? Wouldn't that increase the cost of everything and in effect not give you a raise?
I think inflating the economy in general would be a good idea, and inflating it more and inflating it more rapidly. And I think that would be that many more people who could then spend money all over your town. You know, I think, like, you give a very wealthy person a tax break, who knows what they're going to spend it on? They might buy a painting, you know, might buy a yacht. They might invest in, a really good-looking company in India or Russia. You know, you buy somebody in your town who works waiting tables at a bar a higher wage, chances are they're going to spend it at your local movie theater or your local grocery store or something like that. You know, I think it helps all around. You know, even though some prices of some things may go up a little bit.
Thanks, Rocky, for your call and more phone calls in a moment. You're listening to All Things Political here on the Ideas Network, and Kevin Baker is our guest. Kevin is an essayist. He's an author, a novelist, and he wrote a piece that caught all of our attention on November 15 in the New York Times. It's on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Give it a read. I think you'll find it provocative. Titled Delusions of the Democrats, and it looks at the losses, the historic losses. The Democrats now hold fewer elected offices at both the federal and state level than at any time since the 1920s. Why is that? And they say they're counting on demographics shifting, particularly a greater Latino vote, but don't hold your breath. What the Democrats need is to dream a little, to think big, to offer something, particularly for those, and it's a lot of people in this country, who are having a hard time making ends meet. 800-486-8655 is the number. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, Nicholas Kristof will be joining us. He is an op-ed columnist for the New York Times, has won the Pulitzer a couple times as well. He's been writing a very interesting series, When Whites Just Don't Get It, written the first article August 30th, shortly after Ferguson. It's an interesting day for us to talk about the issues that he raises, and there are many, because NPR, of course, is reporting, you heard it during the news, that the president has spent the day meeting with his cabinet, civil rights leaders, about the mistrust of police in communities of color. He's asking Congress for $263 million, in part to equip local police with body cameras. The Associated Press is saying that the package would increase body use of those cameras, expand training for law enforcement, and add more resources for police department reform. He's also announcing the creation of a task force on 21st century policing to examine how to promote effective crime reduction while building public trust. We'll ask Kevin, because this is All Things Political, what he thinks of that meeting, and we'll certainly ask Nicholas Kristof about that, hour number two of our program. Kevin, what do you make of that meeting that the president had today with civil rights leaders?
I think it's great to try to address these problems, and I think it's great to propose various programs, which probably won't get through the Congress. I think, you know, this is an ongoing problem that's going to have to be addressed, more and more each day by all of us. You know, the kind of mistrust that's out there, and it's, you know, it's something that's gone on a long time. I mean, it's been a problem here in New York with the whole stop and frisk stuff,
right,
which has been, which the new mayor is trying to deal with. You know, it's interesting. It's really a sad thing to, I was reading somewhere today that apparently most Americans think crime has been going up over the last 20 years instead of plunging to new lows. And that's kind of a sad thing. I think there's this kind of culture of fear that starts with things like news networks, constantly showing anything, any horrible incident they can to lead with. You know, in New York, once the murder rate started plunging, they ran out of murders. So you'd see things that, coming up at 11, horrible murder, and it would prove to be in, you know, in Oregon or something.
Oh.
You know, anywhere around the country they could find.
Oh.
So this just, you know, so this just petrifies people. And I think we've kind of got to get it out there that, you know, that they should be less fearful.
What the truth is, yeah. It's always good to know the truth, yeah. Bob in Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Bob.
Hey, good morning. Hey, you've got some great guests on, really intelligent questions and comments. So it strikes me that you got three problems right now. You got one that revolves around spectrum shift, another one that revolves around branding, another one that revolves around messaging. The spectrum shift is the problem that you've got. What the right today is with the left of yesterday, and people don't understand that. There's no historical perspective. The, you know, the Clean Water Act and the Endangered Species Act, those communist Kinko acts that are now anathema and considered hippie freak stuff, were signed by that renowned hippie freak, Richard M. Nixon, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's kind of a problem historically where people think they fit in, which brings us to the branding. Is it's all about where people think they fit in. You know, why is somebody a Presbyterian versus a Catholic? I don't know, because they grew up that way, right? Do they really know the intricacies of what makes for the difference? Which is brings us to the third thing is that, you know, this kind of boils down right now to a large degree to kind of branding. I mean, it's kind of Coke versus Pepsi. They're both sort of sugar water and, you know, take your choice. So I think where the Republicans have the edge right now is that the Republicans, as crazy as their message largely is and as hurtful to many people as it is, it strikes me that the Republicans fall in line while the Democrats with their diverse ideas just sort of fall in love.
I think a lot of Americans do look at it as branding. You know, it's, well, Party A didn't get these spots out of my shirt, so I'm going to try Party B, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's too bad. But that's also one of the things that happens when you don't have a clear message or a clear program for people, you know, that they tend to kind of fall back to the other. And, I think it would be very difficult for many Americans to tell you in a couple of sentences what the Democrats stand for at all right now, whereas Republicans have been very good at creating that and creating a fake narrative, but one that works pretty well, which is that, you know, basically America was utopia until about 1965 when big spending and welfare came in and everything got out of hand. And then, you know, and we want to now cut taxes and get it back to the great way it was, you know. And that's... you know, that's unfortunate, but that's what they sell, and that's what a lot of people believe. And you need a counter narrative to combat that.
Thanks, Bob, very much for your call. Elizabeth on Facebook writes this: I feel compelled to make the point that the shortcomings of the Obama administration are owed, at least in part, to the obstructionism of the Republicans in the House and the Senate.
Sure. Yep. And, they were very, but you have to count on that sort of obstructionism. It's true. It has reached kind of new lows. And to say at the beginning of the administration that your main goal is to turn out this president, as opposed to something like, I don't know, help the country, is kind of shocking. But unfortunately, that's where we are, that's where we're at. But, you know, traditionally one party's fanaticism should make it more vulnerable in this country. You know, there should be ways to undercut that. And this, you know, this administration didn't at all. Some of the, you know, the compromises it keeps talking about would be disastrous if they did it. You know, I know before the 2012 election, President Obama was talking about the grand bargain and trying to, do this thing that would cut Social Security and Medicare along, you know, as part of this cutting of the budget and the deficit. You know, that would like just destroy the Democratic Party. It would destroy one of the most popular things they've ever done. You know, you've got to go bold against a ruthless opponent.
You can't run against Social Security. I mean, the Republicans can't even take that on as a winning issue, right? Because Republicans don't like that either.
Yeah,
can't get rid of Social Security.
Yeah, so why give them that? You know, I think what Democrats don't get too is the leadership of this Republican Party right now. It's almost like one of the more ideological parties of Europe in the 1930s. it fundamentally wants to change the established order in ways that I find really scary, but they're quite determined to do. And they don't get this. They don't seem to. They seem to feel that this is just politics as usual, and it's not.
Let's go to Tom in Cedarburg. Hi, Tom.
Hello?
Yes, Tom, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Kathleen, I just wanted to say that I'm so glad you're on the air in the ear of the rich and powerful, taking over stations in Milwaukee and Madison and many other places around the country and turning them into easy listening. And I'm so glad to hear you are out there and able to give a balanced view. My point is that I think that the Democratic Party lost because it did not talk about to the people of the country before the election the benefits of the labor movement, including unions, and the benefits that the unions have done and brought to the working people since especially the 1920s and 30s, the 40-hour work week, 5 days a week of working, and many other, health care benefits and stuff like that. And they didn't focus on that. And I know there's been all this redistricting and stuff like that throughout the country, which has made it difficult, too, for them to win. But I think they needed to focus more on who really is there backing them and trying to help them, to get in power and to stay in power and to help most of the people in the country, not just the select few.
Kevin.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, and it's getting awfully late for it. But, yes, that's one of the narratives that the Democrats should have fought back with. And instead, not only did they not point out the role that unions have played in the development of this country, they helped throw the unions overboard, helping the Republicans ship all these jobs overseas. It's hard for President Obama or any other Democrat to, make a firm stand for unions when they're trying to cut yet another major trade deal that will lead to more manufacturing, American manufacturing jobs going over to Asia. This is a losing strategy from day one. It's letting a lot of the party's, real troops, just dissolve. It would be as if somehow the Republicans were trying to get rid of the Christian coalition. And it's just a foolish strategy.
Thanks very much for the call, Tom. So Hillary Clinton represents the status quo for the Democrats?
Yes, the status quo and or still worse loss come 2016. I think people will rally around her if she's the nominee, which she probably will be, and the turnout will be better because it's a presidential election. But I don't think she represents the future at all. And while I think she would be probably a better operator in Washington than President Obama, I don't think her policies would be particularly more popular.
So what is it? Are we back to this grassroots movement? It's workers who are demonstrating rather than a top-down leader inspiring a movement. It's a movement that's looking for a leader right now?
Yeah, and the movement has to. If the movement builds itself, the leader will come. Not field of dreams, but I mean, a good movement will produce leaders. And we can't just be standing around waiting for the next person to show up and think, oh, this is so swell. And that's again, it will take time. And I think people should probably. If your choice is Hillary versus whoever, go ahead and vote for Hillary. But it's but beneath that, we've got to be building the party on all sorts of levels or building a party.
Mm. Kevin, thank you so much for being with us. Thanks for writing the article. It just caught my attention immediately, and I thought, of course, as hosting a talk show person would do, we got to have him on the air. And you have not disappointed. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you. It was great to be here. Thank you.
Kevin Baker, our guest. The piece, again, I tell you, or maybe you're just tuning in, read it on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. It's the New York Times Sunday Review section, Delusions of the Democrats, and it's an analysis of the big, big, big loss for Democrats, not only in Congress, but also in state houses all over the country, why that was the case, and trying to inspire people to come up with ideas that mean something. Kevin is an essayist. He's an author. He is a novelist. His work has been published in the Washington Post, Chicago Tribune, LA Times, Harper's, and a number of other publications. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this hour and KP Whaley for on-air production in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and Nicholas Kristof will be joining us the second hour of our program. He wrote another in his five-part series yesterday on When Whites Just Don't Get It. Couple all of those columns with the president's meeting today, and we'll have a lot to talk about, hour two.